With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
The Timeline is a Blue Wire podcast. Welcome to the Timeline of Phoenix Suns podcast. The Suns go down now 3-2, losing 123-119, a close game at the end, probably not indicative of how the game felt to watch. They're down 3-2 now, and essentially if the Suns have any chance of making this a series, they have to win in a place that only one team has won, which is in Milwaukee in this playoffs. And then, of course, Game 7 would be here in Phoenix. And that is an unfortunate situation for the Phoenix Suns. A game that really, in my opinion, felt like it shouldn't have been close. The entire, the first quarter was one thing, right? Beyond that, as soon as Booker went out of the game, things went a little haywire after that first quarter. And anything beyond that, to me, felt like the Bucks were in control pretty dramatically. How'd you feel?
I'm depressed. I feel like that was a rite of passage in some ways as a Suns fan, though, because Suns fans aren't allowed to have good things. And this current new generation of Suns fans, like, we've heard the stories where, you know, we've seen, you know, I mean, I saw the Nash games too, but this was another level, Mike. This fucking sucked. This really sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
So that's how it did.
I mean, back to back 40-point games for Devin Booker.
And you have people, well, 42 and you have people who know that fact and are going to pin it on him. That's what's crazy. That's what's crazy.
Well, yeah, who cares?
Crazy.
Honestly, who cares what they think?
You're right. But this,
I don't. This, and I know a lot of people want to argue, but I think at some point you just have to get over that, because to me the entire game was, when Devin Booker was in, the Suns were controlling it offensively and they had a chance. When Devin Booker went out, things were going badly for the Suns. And this is including, I think what's difficult about this particular game is this is including a good Chris Paul game, a game where the Suns took care of the ball in general, a game where the rebounding discrepancy wasn't something that really affected the game dramatically. It was just a game where the Bucks were hitting shots. And I think that's a tough thing for Monty Williams to go back and say, you know, anything. Really.
Well, I think the most depressing thing about this game is if you evaluate all the reasons we lost in game four.
Yeah.
It was, you got killed on the offensive glass. It was like 17-5. You got killed in turnovers. It was like 17-5. It was like close to that margin as well. You go into this game, you only commit 8 turnovers. The Bucks had 11. They still beat you on the offensive glass. They had 11 offensive rebounds. We had 8, but it's like they're the bigger team. They went super big with Chris Middleton at point guard, for fuck's sake. Like, they're gonna out-rebound you, but just as long as they don't grab 12 more rebounds. They didn't take more shots. Like, last game, for the Bucks to beat the Suns, it took 20 more shots for them to get there. And in this game, both teams, same number of field goals. The Bucks shoot 53% from the goddamn free throw line. And they just, I mean, this was a big three performance if I've ever seen one. Like, it's, go back. We haven't had time to look this up, obviously, but like the Heat era big three never had a game where LeBron, Wade, and Bosh all scored 25 plus in the finals, did they? I almost guarantee they didn't. Did the Warriors ever do that with KD, Curry, and anyone else, be it Clay or, I guess, Clay? I don't think they did that either.
Yeah.
Like, what the Bucks did tonight was fucking ridiculous. And
Yep.
I mean, it got to a point in the fourth quarter where I was just totally despondent. I really didn't think they were coming back, Mike. When they hit a couple of shots, they got a couple stops, and then ultimately, obviously, Booker was doing his thing the whole second half, and then when they came around, he curled around a screen and hit that three, and at that point, I think it was like a four-point game. I perked up. I like didn't see it coming. I really thought they were dead. And then, of course, they had to crush me.
Yeah.
They had to crush me at the end. They're still in it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, because I'm trying to like just stream a consciousness right now, trying to gather my thoughts. They're still in it. All of the reasons that they lost in game four are not the reasons they lost tonight. This was just the worst possible luck you could have in a game. And it had nothing to do with the officiating. It just came down to their players, who typically do not resemble a big three, played like a big three and gave us collectively one of the best performances of top tier talent we've seen in NBA history in the finals. That's how good it was. Like Chris Middleton. This is what's ridiculous about the NBA in 2021 is Chris Middleton, who, if you ask most people on the street, are not even going to say he's a top 15, top 20 player. And Chris Middleton took over like another game in a row and played like he's, you know, a Hall of Fame talent, which is all he needed to do for these couple of games for the Bucks to eke it out. The Suns are...
Yeah, he didn't have 40 like the last game, and I think he started at 1-for-7, a Devin Booker-esque game in that way, in that he started out inefficient and sort of shot his way back into it. Really, really efficient game by the end of the night. And a lot of that was what they were doing is off-ball screening and kind of picking on Chris Paul defensively. In that third quarter, this is when they started hitting a lot of difficult shots over and over again. And for the Bucks, it was Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday shooting over Chris Paul. And I think that's maybe the first time in the playoffs that we've seen anybody really try to attack Chris Paul and take advantage of the size difference between who he's guarding and him. And I think normally he did a good job, and I think he adjusted in a way that allowed him to play better, but they did go on a little bit of a run there, and that's kind of what got Chris Middleton back in it. He found himself against Chris Paul and was able to hit a few shots there, and then his shot started dropping in a more regular way. But it was just a remarkable shooting performance from the Bucks in a lot of ways. I think Drew Holiday hit a lot of sort of leaners and fadeaways that
hasn't made all series.
Yeah,
and
for the Bucks, they need that. I mean, they need him to do that every once in a while if they have any chance of winning the series. And for the Suns, you can't really beat them if they're going to do that. If essentially the 27-13 that they get from Drew Holiday is what you need from Chris Paul, and well, Chris Paul still did. Like I said, once again, Chris Paul had a good game.
Well, okay, 21-11. I want to stop you. Are we sure he had a good game?
21-11.
I know what the box score
is
says.
A lot more than what he did in the last.
I know what the
game.
Box score says. Look, he made some shots at the end. He made his open threes. He made a couple of tough shots over big guys, Portis and Lopez and whatever. I think he had a tough one over Giannis late in the fourth quarter. But the Suns were kind of out of the game because of the way Chris Paul played in the second quarter.
It was the second quarter, right? Yeah, that killed the Suns.
And like,
but I don't
that
think...
was Chris Paul. Not throwing him under the bus. Cause, I mean, I guess maybe I am. I don't know. It's like... Was this a good Chris Paul game? Can we really say that? I don't care if he had 21-11.
I don't think that Chris Paul played in a way that cost the Suns the game. I think I think the Suns had a chance to win, and the Bucks hit a lot of really, really, really difficult
shots.
I agree
with
that. The Suns could have won this game with the way he was playing,
right.
And I don't think it's more complicated than that.
You're right.
For me,
I don't think Chris Paul lost the Suns the game. I think he lost them the game as much as a few other guys lost them the game. It was kind of collectively everyone not named Devin Booker lost the Suns the game. I mean,
yeah,
DeAndre Ayton was not impressive for the vast majority of this game. And again, like the box score, he had 20-10. But first half, DeAndre Ayton did not look good here. You know, I mean, like Jay Crowder was fine. Cale Bridges was fine, I guess. It's like their offense was pretty good. They lost a four-point game.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks scored 123 points. I don't know this off the top of my head, and I could check, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's the most that any team has scored on the Suns in the playoffs so far.
I'll check for you real quick.
That's a lot of points scored by another team. The Suns have been a really solid defense throughout the playoffs. Maybe there's one time or something that somebody else has scored that much, but it's rare for a team to put that many points on the Suns.
It is the most.
At least.
Yeah.
So that's the most. And the Bucks, I mean, the Suns still scored 119 points. And it's just, and look, basketball sometimes is about those little, it's a game of inches, as they say. It's about those extra shots, those fadeaways with the shot clock running down that Jrue Holiday hits. Those absolutely insane shots by Giannis that bounce off the backboard so hard and somehow still go in. And he makes them on good defense. And that's what it takes to win a game at this point. I mean, this is the NBA Finals. The differences are tiny like that. And that's what it takes. And that's why it's hard for me to like put the blame on someone. I think the Suns played really well in this game. It's a tough time for me to like blame any individual player. I think the stretch you're talking about, and I'd like to go back and watch the second half again, because I'm not sure what the Suns did in the bench minutes without Devin Booker on the floor in the second half. It was just a very short period of time, I can tell you that. I know that he was off the floor very little. But what it was for the Bucks is the Bucks had both Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis on the floor at the same time. The Suns had no center. So the Suns, the way that the Bucks played is they were just packing the paint and stopping the Suns from getting any shots at the rim. And they shot wide open threes in that stretch. They were getting open shots and they were not falling. But then they were giving up shots at the rim on the other end, and they were not getting back in transition in the right way on the other end. And I think that was a big part of that specific run. And I'm not sure what they did in the second half. It didn't stand out to me to address that, and I'd like to go back and watch that. But I think it was mostly don't take Devin Booker off the floor very much. That's probably what it boils down to. But that stretch, I think, it was brutal. And they made threes in that stretch too, and the Suns need to just make those shots at some point.
You will be alone in going back and watching that, because I have no desire to ever watch that game again. I don't care what analysis can be taken from it. But I mean, yeah, dude, but like, that's kind of why I say, did Chris Paul really have a good game? Because it was more about when Booker was off the floor, those few minutes that we saw with him, he just wasn't enough of a scoring threat. I know he got to his 21 points by the end of the game, but he didn't impose his will on the half court offense enough. He didn't open up, you know, we know when he gets into the teeth of the defense, it opens up 8-2. It created a situation for the Suns where they had to go mismatch hunting with Booker. And that was their only way to generate offense, is swing the ball around, get Booker on Connaughton or Tucker or whatever, and let him go to work. And they weren't able to get into their typical offense. And I know the Suns hit tough shots tonight too, so they still got to their 119 points. Tip their cap to them. Obviously tip my cap to Booker to have 40 points on 33 shots by doing mismatch hunting. That's great. But I don't know. You got to wonder. Like, they found a way tonight to score points, but it wasn't Phoenix Suns offense. And I guess no. You got to wonder if Phoenix Suns offense, the way we think of it, is even going to come back in game 6 or potentially game 7, like if it's even possible to get that back at this point, or if you've just conceded yourself into the math game that the Bucks want you to play. The Bucks want to take away Ayton's role. They want to take away your corner threes. And then all that's going to be left is these tough mid-range difficult shots. If Booker's scoring 40 points again in game 6 and game 7, great. We've got a chance. But it's tough.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that is they're willing to switch a smaller guy onto DeAndre Ayton, and they just really kind of suck the defense in a little bit and make that pass as difficult as possible, so they're not allowing DeAndre Ayton to catch it close to the rim, forcing him back out, and then just making the Suns isolate. And look, I think you can go back to and watch this game and try and figure out what the Suns could do differently offensively. But once again, 119 points in this game. Maybe they can get more threes, right? You can place an emphasis on more threes, but they made 13 in this game, and they were 13 for 19. They shot 68% from the three-point line. And I think a lot of it is just finding ways to make those shots, continue to make those shots as difficult as possible for the Bucks, and force them into some sort of scenario where maybe one of those three guys is not playing the way that they're currently playing. And I think that would help. That would help a lot. And the other part is, win the Bobby Portis minutes. You can't let the Bucks win the Bobby Portis minutes. I mean, you just can't. You can't do
Man,
that.
I understand. No, keep going. Sorry.
I understand Pat Connaughton is going to come in and do some things. Maybe that's the guy on the bench that has a positive plus minus, but you can't let it be Bobby Portis.
Yeah, I mean, Pat Connaughton, you know, I talked about he was being filleted by Booker throughout the game, but even so, he's not Michael Porter Jr. That's kind of why I was talking about mismatch hunting. Like, he's not, it's not the same level of bad matchup, in my opinion. And we're sort of...
Teague was that.
Exactly. Well, that's where I was
going. For those
minutes.
That's
where I was going next, is Teague played one stint of 7 minutes. He was minus 11. And then I think he checked back into the game for like 1 minute to give Holiday a quick break in the second half. But other than that, that was it for him. And we're sort of at a point now in the series where the garbage players on both sides, no more Frank Kaminsky, no more Abdul Nader, no, maybe no more Jeff Teague starting next game too. You know, like we might see a fucking 7-man rotation from the Bucks and Suns at this point. I mean,
yeah,
Torrey Craig only played 9 minutes in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's only
Cameron,
it's,
even Cameron Johnson, 22.
It's only your best guys at this point. And so, yeah, it, you know, if Drew plays 43, 44 minutes in game six and he plays like this again, then they're going to be amazing. If he doesn't, I mean, they don't want to play Jeff Teague.
No,
but still,
I mean,
like
the only reason they did is because of two early
fouls
just, from Drew.
It's hard because like the Suns have been held up as this deep team, but it's just they can't rely on that now. It's just going to be both teams going to their top
and you
seven
never
or eight
can.
Guys. I know. At yeah. this level, you never can. It's just going to be the top seven or eight guys, and whoever's better is better. I don't know if that's supposed to make you feel confident or not. I don't feel particularly confident right now, but
yeah,
we've seen...
Well, when you're down in the series, it's hard to feel confident. You'd have to win both of the next two games.
I've
they
seen
started with
Drew
two,
and
two
Chris
wins
play
in a row,
like
yeah.
shit before. That's basically all I got to go off right now. The problem is they have now showed us three guys who are capable of going off for basically 30 points, and we have two yeah. of those guys. That's yeah. bad math for yeah. the Suns. Unless
yeah.
DeAndre Ayton is successfully established enough early in the game that he can squeeze his way to one of those. Or we had a 27-point game from Mikal Bridges once. Feels to me like that's not going to happen again. Just based on what we've seen. This is not his series.
Well, if they continue defending the way that they have been for their three wins, and there's no reason for them to change that, it's going to be difficult for any of the sort of role players to get going a little bit. And once again, DeAndre Ayton's points are related to what Devin Booker and Chris Paul are doing, so there is a way for him to get to those points. But this is, I think, one of the first times in the playoffs that we've seen a scenario where DeAndre Ayton's inability to create offense for himself from like a significant a distance from the basket kind of does affect the Suns negatively, because they don't have another guy. Like I said, the Bucks are willing to switch somebody like Pat Connaughton on DeAndre Ayton, and the Suns can't do anything with that, because if they just make that pass as difficult as possible, you can't give it to Ayton 18 feet away and hope that he gets fouled or something
there's,
like that. It's just, it hasn't worked.
There was one possession where they tried that, and it was just completely broken possession. By the way, with Mikal, bellwether stat right here. I've seen some people bring it up before, but it gets even worse tonight. When Mikal Bridges attempts at least 10 field goals in the playoffs, the Suns are 10-0. When he attempts less than that, and he only took 6 tonight, they're now 4-7.
Yeah, I think that's indicative of the Suns forcing other teams into a defensive rotation.
It's,
that's
right.
really all
it's
it
not,
is.
It's not a give the ball to Mikal Bridges and let him go to work type yeah. stat, but I do think it's interesting
no.
because, yeah, it's there has to be some level of offensive aggression. He stepped into a pull-up 3 tonight once. That was cool.
Yeah, I mean, he offensively, he was 5 for 6.
Yeah, he was fine, you know? I guess. I don't know.
He made the shots that he was given. And I even think the one that he missed was a surprise for me. It was one of those pull-up mid-range shots that he normally makes. And Ayton, there was too many times in this game where Ayton was in the position to offensive rebound and just wasn't really going after it in the way that you really need him to in order for the Suns to be successful in this game. He had 3 offensive rebounds still, but like ending this game with only 10 rebounds is a disappointment for me for him. And look, I will say this. Teams were making shots in this game, so there was less rebounds to go around. So that number necessarily doesn't bother me as much as just what I saw. And I just think the Suns need to get after it a little bit more, especially on those mid-range shots. You have to find ways to get in position to rebound there.
All right, fuck the adjustment talk for a second, if you don't mind. We're going on the road now. It's do or die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where's your trust level at in, give me a few people. I want your trust going into game 6 for Devin Booker, for Chris Paul, maybe for Monty Williams too. What do you think?
Yeah. Let's see. I mean, how do you want to do this? You want to rank them or just give it like on a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah, scale of 1 to 10.
Okay, if we're going scale of 1 to 10, I'll start with the guy that I trust the most at this point, and that's got to be Devin Booker. I mean, the only issue with Devin Booker has been 1 or 2 dumb fouls a game. And that's really it. Beyond that, I think he is finding creases in the defense. He's attacking the rim more than he has in specifically the one game he was bad in, which was game 3. And I think that at this point, he's at sort of the peak of his powers. And I think some people will point at the assist numbers and sort of try to go at him for that. Look, I think this is one of the dumbest things that I can think of as far as discourse goes. If a player has a great game and they lose, it's somehow his fault. That's where it always flies. You point at the guy who somehow was good and say he should have done more.
From engagement trolls.
Engagement trolls is a good word for it. And those people are just wrong. The Suns were at their best when Devin Booker was on the floor at all times in this game. I understand the concept of, well, the other players are not in rhythm when they get the ball. Suns didn't shoot bad in this game. They had nothing to do with that.
Here's the thing, because I said that in the first half, right? I said that there's too much mismatch hunting here. But that was under the premise that we had a totally healthy Chris Paul. If you have a totally healthy Chris Paul, you run your stuff. But this gets into why I was asking you about trust level and Chris Paul. Because I want you to answer in a second. I don't trust Chris Paul right now, going into game 6. I mean, it's not at a 1 out of 10, but it's probably less than a 5. He doesn't look right. He's not playing Chris Paul basketball. It was a little bit encouraging to see, obviously, the 11 assists to 1 turnover. At least Drew didn't bump him off and force 4 or 5 turnovers in this game. But if he's not putting that pressure on the Bucks defense, then everything has to run through Booker. And it's just so tough. The equation there is so tough.
Look, I'm going to throw out the one scale of 1 to 10 thing because I don't feel like I'm going to be able to do it. But if we're talking about the starters here, Devin Booker is the guy I trust the most. Chris Paul is still number 2 here. The other guys we're talking about is Jay Crowder, DeAndre Ayton, and Mikal Bridges. DeAndre Ayton has been up and down so far in this series. Mikal Bridges has been up and down in this series. And Jay Crowder has been up and down in his entire career. That's who he is. So if we're talking about who I trust, it's still Devin Booker number 1, Chris Paul number 2. Even with some games where he has struggled, Chris Paul a little bit, in this game, I will say this game was not that. I think the main thing you look at for him is only having 1 turnover to 11 assists. That's what the Suns need in order to play well. The only thing I think that made him really bad in the last game, the scoring was one thing, but the 5 turnovers, especially turnovers at the worst possible time, that's, I think, where the Suns struggled with Chris Paul. This game, he wasn't that. So if he can continue to play as he's doing in this game, maybe a few other open shots, that helps. And for Monty Williams, by the way, calling a timeout a little earlier when the Suns are getting killed without Devin Booker on the floor, I think would help a lot too. Because that, I think Chris Paul was a little out of sorts. I don't blame him for that run that the Suns went on. They were getting open shots. I'll say it once again. Chris Paul was finding open guys in that run in the second quarter. They were just missing every wide open 3. And I don't know how much you can put that on him at that point. This could have been a 14 assist game if they made those shots.
They did shoot 68% from deep tonight though, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was the stretch that they weren't making them. I mean, because when you have 2 big guys on the floor, you can get that defense a little out of position. for the Bucks, and they just weren't making those shots at that point. So if we're talking about guys I trust, it's still Devin Booker number one, Chris Paul number two, and it would take something worse than what we're seeing. It would be more like the Lakers series
with
Chris Paul for me to change.
There is no adjustment. I mean, you don't play campaign. You just don't. It's
Chris
liver.
Paul said they just got to play better.
That's what he said. Did he just say that? I mean, you just live or die.
After game four.
I believe Chris Paul wants it. I just don't trust his body right now. It sucks to say, but I don't. I'm not trying to use the injury as an excuse, but I don't know how else to say it. He doesn't look right. And there's no adjustment to that. You don't play campaign over him in game six.
No, that would be insane.
We're going to live or die by our two dynamic guards. I think the best we can hope for is Booker has given me a lot of confidence in this series. I think he's going to come out strong. I think Chris can run an offense. You know, he can get to 15 or 20 points. I would be surprised if he exploded. I would be elated if he exploded in game six, but I would be surprised with the way he's playing. So the best you can hope for is DA continues to play great stand-up one-on-one defense against Giannis. Doesn't get into foul trouble.
Well.
And then you can afford a solid to good, maybe even a great game. Out of one of Middleton or Drew, you can't have both. If both of them go off, you're done. The series is over.
Yeah. Yeah. I think beyond that, too, I think the Suns could do a little bit better at guarding the three-point line in transition. I said it the last game when Giannis is dribbling down, and this is partly because the Suns are walling up against him. But if Ayton's there, maybe you're a step closer to the shooters on that. You trust Ayton to try and defend him at the rim and get back to those shooters, because I think they're just getting too many open threes in transition. I think the Suns could do a little bit better at defending that. But the main thing is, at this point, it's going to be tough because Chris Paul, if you can find ways to not get Chris Paul switched onto Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton, that might help a little. But at some point, you probably have to trust him to guard them and just see how well he does. But yeah, they were picking on him a little bit there, and that's something that he has to play a little better on, I think. Anything else that you have?
No.
As far as this game?
No. I think we can we can call it a little bit early tonight, get some rest. We got two more days till Tuesday, baby. I gotta say,
yeah, and then if there's a game seven, there's only one game.
It's true. Only one day. Yep.
Or one day, I should say, between. That it would be Tuesday game six and then Thursday game seven.
And then
seven.
The draft.
One thing I will say.
And free agency and the Olympics.
Yeah, we have no time to rest.
And Jesus
Christ. We'll never sleep, Sam. You and I will never sleep. One thing I will say is these losses hurt. And I understand that they hurt. And I think that for Suns fans, it's okay if you allow yourself to feel that pain, if you will. But also, Devin Booker did just have back-to-back 40-point games in the NBA Finals, and that's pretty remarkable for a player as young as he is. And I think it's okay to find some joy in that, and even just find some joy in the fact that the Suns are in this position at all. I find myself reminding myself throughout the game that this is pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see. And look, that does not necessarily take away from the pain that happens in a loss. But it is a basketball game where millionaires are playing each other, and it's okay to sort of enjoy that you're even watching it all. Most teams are not watching a team play at this point in the playoffs. So, I mean, Suns fans, find a way to enjoy the fact that Devin Booker, the guy who people have been shitting on for years, is scoring 40 points back-to-back games in the NBA Finals. Ignore the people that want to find a way to discredit that. Who cares what they think, ultimately? Because it's happening right now. And if you can, find a way to enjoy this, because I'm doing my best to try and find ways to enjoy this, I guess I should say. But we'll be back once again after the next game, hopefully. And hopefully it's a win, and then we get to talk about a game seven in the NBA Finals. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.